We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Your Politics podcast here on RTE. I'm David Murphy and we're joined today by Labour's Education, Enterprise and Trade spokesman, Eoin O'Riordan. Eoin, how are you?
Hi, David.
Enterprise and trade and education, in a way, they're three of the biggest sectors hit by COVID, aren't they?
Well, they are, and normally the education spokesperson possibly wouldn't get as much profile or get as much public comment as I've made over the last year, but COVID has changed all that, and education for many people is at the top of their priority list, with schools closing, changes to the Leaving Cert, and issues around vaccination for teachers and SNAs. It certainly has kept me busy for the last year, and with enterprise, it's basically a pause button has been put on that for the last period of time, and so most of it is about the supports that are available for those who aren't doing anything and being mandated by government not to do anything. So it's a very unusual time, but it's certainly, from my point of view, trying to be constructive and trying to help be a voice that can encourage people that we can get out of the mess that we're in, because I think any TD will tell you, regardless of the party that they're from, is that people are pretty much at breaking point.
One of the interesting things in relation to education has been the reprioritization of the vaccines. And the government made certain commitments to teachers that they would have prioritization in terms of being vaccinated. Then they changed that prioritization to do it on the basis of age. The teachers have objected. Where does the Labour Party stand on that?
Well, you have to understand where teachers and SNAs are coming from on this, because there's been a huge amount of sort of lack of goodwill or bad faith that's built up over the course of this pandemic. The department keeps putting out circulars on Friday evenings. There's been huge communications difficulties. We had a problem there in January where effectively the minister and the junior minister in the department seemed to be deliberately pitting teachers and SNAs against parents when it came to opening up of schools. So the good faith has waned and the morale has really dipped. So maybe in another context, when teachers felt as if they were being listened to and they felt that they were being appreciated, and SNA is similar, that an instance such as what happened this week would have been a different reaction to it. But in order to go back into school, as you've quite rightly said, guarantees were given to teachers and SNAs that they would be reprioritised, that they wouldn't stay at number 11 on the schedule. They could be possibly reclassified as key workers. And in every conversation I have with the minister, understanding in all of this that if you're going to reprioritise teachers and SNAs, that means that somebody has to lose out. So we appreciate that. But it came as a complete blow from the blue this week that the schedule had completely changed and that all those commitments that were given meant nothing. So to be honest, we're seeking a meeting with the minister to discuss it. She has apparently said this at Cabinet that she was unhappy about it, apparently said it at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party that she was unhappy about it. So we'd like to meet with her as a collective from the opposition. And I know that the teacher unions and education partners want to meet with her as well to discuss how this new schedule is going to work. Now, if government can prove to teachers and SNAs that this new schedule is actually going to do effectively the same thing, well then, you know, maybe there's a way out of it for them. But I absolutely believe that those frontline workers, and obviously I'm in the education sector, so I would prioritise teachers and SNAs. The number one political priority since Christmas has been getting schools open. People have spoken about, you know, the restrictions being eased this week. Well, in many ways, that has already happened, with primary schools opening, special schools opening, childcare facilities and visits being allowed to care homes. So we are putting potentially a lot of things at risk with the further opening up.
But at the same time, would you accept that the National Immunisation Advisory Committee has recommended to reschedule the vaccines on the basis of age? And in fact, profession isn't so much of a factor. Age is a key determinant in how sick people get if they get COVID-19.
I can accept that, and nobody wants to go against public health advice. But I think in terms of education, I'm a 44-year-old TD. I don't interact with many people in my job at the moment. I essentially work in an office and I'm not in contact, very closely with anybody day to day. But I'm going to get a vaccination under this schedule much quicker than a 25-year-old SNA who is in close contact and dealing with the, you know, intimate care needs of a child with additional needs. I think in that circumstance, in terms of education, if we're serious about keeping schools open, teachers and SNAs, because they are dealing with so many young people, because there's so many contacts involved, that an exception would be made there. And I know Gardaí will say the same, and I know other essential services will say the same, and retail will say the same. But in terms of a political priority, for the first time possibly in a generation, education is a genuine political priority.
Okay, but would you accept that for the ministers in government, they're besieged by people who want to move up the priority list? One minister said to me, everybody wants to move up the list, but nobody wants to move down the list. And every time you make a decision to move one group up, obviously another group has to move down.
I accept all that, but remember in January, I mean, this all comes under wider context. Remember in January when I was talking about getting back to school, and the rhetoric from government was basically, effectively, and the media management was a disgrace. The message from government was that teachers and SNAs effectively are blocking your children going back to school. That was the message. And so teachers and SNAs and those working in schools have felt that they were being abandoned by their minister and abandoned by their department, and that they're being used as a political pawn in order to curry favour with the parents of children with additional needs. And so the unions became under pressure and the SNAs came under pressure that they were the problem. And now we have a situation where guarantees given to them in terms of vaccination are now meaningless.
Let's talk a little bit about the Labour Party. We're over 1 year since the general election. There was a new leader appointed, Alan Kelly, with promises that the party would be rebuilt. And obviously, the endeavour was to increase support for the party. But judging by the opinion polls, that hasn't really happened. Why is that?
Well, it's a year actually since the leadership election, and I took part in that leadership election, and I got a huge amount out of it. Myself and Alan both did, and we went around the country in so much as we could do at that time, and we spoke about the party. But I suppose once the pandemic hit, everything that you wanted to do for the Labour Party comes secondary to the national effort. And you know, we haven't been able to go around the country, we haven't been able to go around even our constituencies and talk about our message, because really, it's when you're involved in politics, it's about the people and the party comes second. But in terms of what you've said about our polling, of course, we'd like it to be better. But if I look at the most recent...
What is it now? It's 4% according to the most recent Red Sea.
If you look at where we were a year ago, we had 1% support from 18 to 34-year-olds. Now we've got 5% support in that same age bracket. If you look at Dublin, where we were struggling in around the same mark as we had nationally, now the most recent one has us at 7%. 7% in Dublin is a very healthy figure that we can build on. It's a crowded space. People, I think, still look at us as a party of the establishment, not of change. And if people are looking for change, they have looked beyond the Labour Party. And that's a challenge for us to ensure that people can remember what the Labour Party have brought to Irish politics in the past and what we can bring to Irish politics in the future. I think in the last Oireachtas, we were still a bit traumatised from the election defeat. We went from, you know, 50-odd parliamentarians down to 11. And with that, with every single parliamentarian is a number of staff that you get used to. So we were a big national organisation which was hugely reduced, and that takes a long time to get over.
Is there merit in consideration of a merger with the Social Democrats? Because in reality, many of your policies are very closely aligned.
I think there is, but I don't care what you call the Social Democratic movement in Ireland or the centre-left movement in Ireland or the socialist movement in Ireland, as long as it does something. So my vision that I laid out in the leadership campaign was for a 32-county social democratic movement that could involve the Labour Party, the Social Democrats, you know, the SDLP, and maybe elements of the Green or even, you know, people in parties such as Fianna Fáil, who in parts of the country have been You know, the voices of the worker or voices of those who are disadvantaged. So I would be quite positive of the potential for a new 32-county movement that can include all of our voices. I've never been as attached to emblems or to names as I have been to the values. And I can easily find myself into the future, be it as a representative or as a member of a movement that has people at the centre of it, workplace rights at the centre of it, social democracy at the centre of it. And the name of that and the title you put on that and the emblem you put beside it is secondary to me to the values.
Have there been any sort of overtures to the Social Democrats?
No. And I think, in fairness, we have so much to do in terms of trying to keep people safe from a virus that's killing people that everything in that space is secondary. But look, I look at the Greens in government, and I say this honestly, because I see what happened to us in government. We go in and we were savaged by people on the left, no matter what we did. And I see it now happening to the Greens, that people are deliberately lining up in coordinated fashion to savage absolutely everything that the Green Party do. But I have a different perspective. I think if the Green Party agenda achieves, then we all will benefit from it. I genuinely believe that, because they have a higher aim and vision for the future of the planet and sustainable living and, you know, clean politics. And that's, I think we need to see politics like that succeed. I think we need to see politics such as what the Social Democrats believe in to succeed. And I would put, obviously, my own party at the heart of that as well. I don't subscribe to a narrow-minded nationalist agenda. I never have. I don't believe in right-wing politics. I never have. So I think if you're serious about what politics will do for people, then you have to be encouraged by people in government, people who will go into government in order to do the right thing. There are questions that are asked of the Green Party in government that would never be asked of Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, because people assume that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael belong there, and they assume that the Green Party, the Social Democrats, the Labour Party don't.
Okay, if there was to be a merger between the Social Democrats and the Labour Party, would it be a merger of equals?
Well, I mean, I think I have no idea. Yes, I assume it would be, but and there's no suggestion of a takeover either way. I wasn't in the Labour Party when the merger happened with Democratic Left, so I don't have any muscle memory of that. But I think, to be honest, a lot of that is about it's about the colour of politics and not about the core of politics. Because what would such an entity be charged with doing? What would the point of that entity be? I mean, I made this point during the leadership election, and I've spoken to Alan Kelly a lot about it over the past year. If the Labour Party didn't exist, would we set it up? And we would. And we would, because 23% of Irish workers are in low pay, and 40% of young people under 30 are in insecure work. And there's any amount of improvements we could make to workplace rights, to collective bargaining rights that aren't enshrined in the constitution, and other countries have stronger labour laws than we would. So that would be the basis on why you would establish the Labour Party today. Now, people will get distracted and entertained by the personalities at the top of parties, or the logos and the colours and all the rest of it. But at the heart of any such realignment in Irish politics has to be the values. And at the end of my life, David, to be honest, I don't really want to look back and say I was part of a party and look at the number of seats we won, or look at the number of votes we got. That's not the point. At the end of your political life, or indeed at the end of your life, you want to look at what you did for people.
Okay. Éan O'Riordan, thanks very much for joining us on the Europolitics podcast. And we're now joined by Surika Nuriadha and Sandra Hurley of RTE News. Let's talk a little bit about the week that we've had. Sandra, has it been a good week for the government? They did relax some restrictions, but it's not as if they're bathing in a glow of praise, is it?
No, and I don't think they would have expected to be greeted with delight. I mean, the changes were quite minor that they had announced, except perhaps if you were vaccinated. And I think the government is hoping that so-called vaccine bonus, that people might be very happy with that. But otherwise, if you don't play sport, or if you're not included in those particular categories of people playing sport, then it won't make a huge amount of difference to you. And the other obvious thing to say is a lot of people are flouting the restrictions in terms of meeting up outdoors anyway. So being told that they can now meet with one other household, it maybe won't make that much of a difference. But I think the big problem for the government is that while I thought the Taoiseach gave a really good, sharp speech on Tuesday, and he gave people something to look forward to. The problem was that it got all confused with the vaccine reprioritisation, and there's just so much unhappiness with that in terms of the various unions. And the government are aware that they are facing a bit of a nightmare scenario on this, because if all the union representatives and various groups get together and form an alliance, they would be a really powerful bloc and could make things difficult in terms of what they might threaten to do.
Sirka, one of the interesting things about this is there's a sense that the government has landed itself in a situation where effectively it's taking on some of the most powerful unions and lobby groups in the country by reprioritising the vaccines, namely the teachers and particularly the guards as well.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, they were in a really difficult situation before this decision was made, because, you know, how do you prioritise in terms of the Gardaí over the teachers, or the SNAs over the teachers, or the bus drivers and the people who work in shops? And, you know, at what stage do you say that one person's front line type job is more important than another person's? You know, I think it was a difficult, it would have been difficult, and obviously they were having a difficulty identifying those cohorts. Like, we've already heard about the difficulties they had in terms of health workers, that maybe some people who weren't frontline health workers got vaccines that maybe shouldn't have got it. So you can imagine that it would have been pretty difficult to try and sort out the other cohorts. So in some ways, I think it's easier. That's what the government have said, that it will be easier to do it this way. And when you think, like, some of the figures Stephen Donnelly gave in the Dáil this morning, I have to say I was quite surprised when he was comparing the age cohorts of how much more dangerous it is for someone between 60 and 64, or 50 and 54, or, you know, from 50 to 64, we'll say, compared to 20 to 34. Like, the rate of death for the 60 to 64, I think, was 70 times higher than the 20 to 34, and 15 times higher for the 50 to 54. So, like, you're just looking at, it makes much more sense. You know, there are a lot of teachers who are in that age category as well. This, at least this way, all the people who are at risk will be vaccinated as quickly as possible.
Sandra, the other area where the government seems to be in a bit of difficulty is over mandatory hotel quarantine. The health minister has been holding discussions with his government partners about potentially adding to the list of countries whereby people arriving in would have to go into mandatory hotel quarantine. There seems to be some tension with his government partners over that. Did he lay the path correctly for all of this? Did he do the early work before he tried to introduce this as a proposal?
Yeah, I think Stephen Donnelly is really under pressure on this on a few fronts. The Attorney General is suggesting that there's a lot of legal concerns around this. Simon Coveney's not happy about a lack of consultation. And lots of people in government are saying there is no way that we've got the mandatory hotel quarantine space to put up people if they're coming in from France, Germany, Spain, the US, all these countries that Stephen Donnelly has proposed adding to the list. It would be really difficult because they are adding lots of countries that people actually go to. Bear in mind, on the current list of 33 countries, only two of them, the United Arab Emirates and Austria, there are only two countries with direct flights. I think there's a lot of focus on the fact that Simon Coveney has made it very clear that he's not happy with the lack of consultation. That was made clear on Tuesday when this emerged. Simon Coveney has been speaking today on Highland Radio, and he has stated very clearly that he does not think this should apply to countries with large numbers of Irish people. He sees a lot of issues with adding many EU countries, that there would need to be lots of consultation with other countries within the EU. So he is clearly very unhappy. Now, I'm told that legally this wouldn't have to go to a full cabinet decision. The legislation does allow countries to be added to the list, but it has to be done by the Department of Health in consultation with Foreign Affairs. That seems to have broken down in some way, although Stephen Donnelly has said the consultation is underway. But it's very clear that this has turned into a bit of a row.
At the same time, Sirka, if you look at it, the opposition in the Dáil, their message for many of them is, put everyone coming into Ireland into mandatory hotel quarantine. But as we begin to look at increasing the list, you can see that there are other problems that would emerge.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things that the government kind of succumbed to pressure from the opposition on this issue, and that it really has been one difficulty after another. And, you know, we saw the farcical situation last week where you had people who were in quarantine escaping out of quarantine. It just seems to me the whole thing is wrought with difficulties, and that trying to do it was always going to be a tough ask.
Sandra, could I just ask you, in terms of the issue of restrictions, the interesting thing is that we've seen the government relax the restrictions, but is there a danger by relaxing the restrictions that what's actually going to happen is that people behave as if all the restrictions have been lifted and in fact they can do anything they like, and in reality people may be just looking at this in a binary way, either there's a lockdown or there isn't?
I would say that is definitely a concern within government. I spoke to many members of cabinet last weekend in advance of the considerations in terms of what to do in easing restrictions, and several of them really wanted to relax some restrictions, but they were very concerned that it sends out the wrong signal, that exactly that, that people hear that something is being relaxed and they just go ahead and do it anyway. Other people have the view that there's some who have completely, you know, done what they were supposed to the entire time, most likely the vast majority of the Irish people. It's only a small number who are not adhering to the restrictions, so that they have to do something for the larger number who have been essentially been good the whole way through. So that is a difficult balancing act. But the reality is that there was an acceptance that they had to do something. And even in NPHET, even though the advice was very, very cautious, NPHET did advise some relaxation. I think they knew, essentially, the words being said to me last weekend were that people, they knew people were completely fed up.
Sirica, it's interesting, like Stephen Donnelly seems to find himself at the centre of so many things at the moment, at the centre of the vaccine reprioritisation, the mandatory hotel quarantine, some people saying that really should have been the job of the Department of Justice, and obviously the management of all of the COVID-19 restrictions. How do you think he's handling it, and how is it reflecting on Fianna Fáil generally?
Yeah, interesting question, David. I suppose I think he has improved a bit. You know, he got off on a very shaky start, if you like. And I suppose he does get a lot of bad press, but then some of it he brings on himself. He's doing okay. It's kind of hard to know how much Stephen Donnelly is identified with Fianna Fáil because of the fact that he was with the Social Democrats initially and so on, that he's not seen as true, you know, an out and out Fianna Fáiler. So maybe they might be lucky and that his bad press to date may not rub off on that to that extent, even though, you know, given how they've been doing in the polls, it's hard to see that really.
Sandra, in terms of Fianna Fáil, Sirica was mentioning how they were doing in the polls. The Red Sea poll for the Business Post last weekend, another figure which would be very disappointing for Taoiseach Micheál Martin, suggesting that potentially the support could be around 11%. Why is it going so badly for Fianna Fáil? Arguably, while they're at the holding the reins, they're beginning to turn things around. We're beginning to see the first signs of the vaccine's effect.
Yeah, I think that question about why they're not getting any bounce in the polls is being asked by everybody in Fianna Fáil, and it has been for several months, because Fine Gael, their partners in government, are doing way, way better, and their numbers have held up very well in all these series of polls. It's not just about one poll, it's about the trend over time. Fianna Fáil does not seem to be getting a bounce, and there is real concern in the party in relation to that. John Lahart, I believe, at the parliamentary party last night suggested that if they didn't get a bounce after the vaccinations, then a conversation would need to be had. And there is really, I suppose, a lot of people are holding out hope that once everybody is vaccinated, if this all goes well, the supply should come through, then that the sentiment towards the party should turn. I think people are conscious also, obviously, questions have been asked about the leadership. Everybody knows that their shape's being thrown and people looking at what might happen into the future. The word, the phrase somebody else put to me about that today was that it would be self-indulgent to do anything radical at the current time. They described it as national need, that, you know, there's no way the party would try and set something in motion given that it's a time to be united and for the government parties to just keep their acts together and get the vaccinations done. So I think questions about that have been put off for later.
Sarika, is there a certain irony in the fact that in Fine Gael, obviously the leader is under investigation by the Gardaí? In the Green Party, the leader is under pressure from within his own party, where there are internal ructions continually. And then it's actually Fianna Fáil where the leader is under most pressure of all.
Yeah, it really is extraordinary that they haven't had any bounce at all in the polls. And I suppose, though, when you look back on, you know, they've been in government 6, 7, 8, 9 months maybe, and they just haven't been able to deal with anything else apart from the pandemic really in that time. And even the rules for the pandemic, the PUP, and all those decisions were made before they came into power. So they're not getting the benefit of that either. They just, you know, it feels like we've been in a bit of a holding pattern for the last couple of months and that nothing has changed. And especially for Fianna Fáil, they just aren't having an impact. The ministers that are there, I mean, you never see Charlie McConlogue, for example, the Minister for Agriculture. I'm trying to think of when was the last time I saw him out on the airwaves. Or, you know, you just, even Norma Foley, the tough time she had in terms of education and the difficulties they've had. It's just one thing after another where Fianna Fáil are concerned, and they're just not getting any benefit out of being in government at the moment.
Okay, Sandra, the Dáil is going to take a break now for the next fortnight. Do you think that the politicians will be glad to head for the hills over the next 2 weeks? Or is it a case, as we've seen over recent times, when they have had a break, in fact, the government are still going full throttle trying to manage the crisis?
Well, I think individual politicians will be very grateful for having a break. As you mentioned, it has just been relentless, I think, in terms of the demands during the entirety of the pandemic. But you're right, it's not going to let up for the government. They are managing in a time of national crisis, and they are going to be dealing with the same questions in relation to vaccinations and maybe all those unfairness issues that have been highlighted in relation to the Beacon and other people jumping the queue, all those suggestions. They're going to be firefighting the entire time. But yes, if individuals can get a little bit of time off, I think they'll be very glad.
Okay, Sarika Nuriitta and Sandra Hurley, thanks very much for joining us on the Europolitics podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review, and we'll talk to you next time.